Tuesday afternoon, Mardi Gras, Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell, and in studio, Eric Meehan from Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. It's Message in the Bottle time. Welcome.
Thank you. It's such a night. Such an evening. I don't know. We're getting there.
Yeah.
It's my best. Hi, everyone. I am speaking to you. I'm not in a back brace, but I should be. Here's the thing about snow and my son. So we told my son, hey, it's perfect snowball weather.
Uh-oh.
And then I threw a snowball to demonstrate at my wife, who looked at me like, I will divorce you if you do that again. So I didn't. And then my son got really into throwing snowballs at me, hit me in the face with one.
Dear.
And then he learned how to fly. Which means my back is no good today.
Oh, dear.
But that's nice. It's nice for him. How's everybody doing? I mean, this was like the first good snow, I think, of the season. Yeah. I mean, people up at Sugarloaf have been rejoicing about their snowfall, but like, I hope everybody had fun yesterday. I think we had a pretty good like snow day. It was pretty decent.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Did you enjoy your snow day? I mean, when did you find out, by the way? I'm curious, as a teacher or brewer.
It was early. I woke up at about 4:15, yeah. And I think the word had already gone out.
See, I was actually surprised because I don't sleep anyway. I don't, you know, that's like, I'm one of these, I don't have the drive to be a dictator. So I'm not like one of those people who only sleeps for 4 hours.
Thank
tonight.
Goodness.
Yeah, this is, I would be a terrible dictator. I'd be like, bring me more Cheetos or you die. Mm. But I don't sleep. So I was up all night, you know, waiting for that call, expecting, sure. You know, like it would be early. And it came for Bangor at like 5:15.
And some schools canceled the day before.
Yeah, that's kind of, that was very strange. So anyway, it's March.
Woo!
That's what they tell me.
Finally.
And yeah, I mean, and that's when we get our first good snow, right? And but the sun's still out.
Isn't that nice?
It's a good thing.
Time changes this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Well, don't we get kicked back again? Like we?
Oh, no. This is spring ahead.
Spring ahead. Oh, God.
It'll be light till like 6:15, 6:30.
I wake up at the same time anyway. It really, right. Like, you know, it's so funny. Like my son is he's so attuned to it. Like he'll be, as soon as the light is out, he's up. Doesn't matter what time. But yeah, so it's a new month and we're talking about packaging. We're talking about how that beautiful liquid gets to you. And this is always kind of a fun month because especially in this time of ours, we're really seeing this, a lot of testing of like, what's going to work, what's going to work. And of course, we're going to talk about, you know, the different ways, not only, you know, glass bottles and the different ways that bottles are closed up, but cans and kegs and boxes and, I mean, it's amazing how many people are trying to figure out how Americans, especially since we're the world's number one consumer of wine now, how we want to consume wine. And people are getting it right and wrong in ways that are just tremendous. And believe me, I'm no more an expert than anything else. I see some things and I think that they're going to fail miserably and they succeed beautifully. But I think that, you know, the ultimate key for any of these things as we go throughout this month of talking about how different wines are packaged and why is the juice good. So we're going to start out today talking about the original, you know, basic plain Jane glass bottles. And when did that all start and why did it start and how did it start? And we're going to drink a fantastic wine out of a traditional glass bottle, although it's one of my favorite glass bottles because it looks like it's a short little stubby bottle, but it's indeed a regular 750 milliliter bottle. So bottles and glass in general, right? Glass was first produced in northern Syria in about 3000 BC. That's not glass bottles or anything. That's just like glass. Like they first figured out if you essentially heat sand, you come up with this thing. But it wasn't until the Romans figured out glass blowing that bottles were produced. And as we all talk about the Romans all the time on this segment, because they love them some wine, they figured out how to make glass blowing for all sorts of things. But the thing about their bottles is that they were beautiful and artistic and you know, they were not exactly regular, though. They couldn't, you know, it was when you blow glass, I mean, it's very difficult to figure out the volume in exact ways. And of course, as I said, they're very delicate. So the Romans still, despite, you know, inventing glass blowing, stuck with amphora, which is another thing that's making a huge, huge comeback. Obviously, we're not at the stage of buying wine in M4A like Romans did. And indeed they did. I mean, that's literally like they would ship amphora back and forth, and that's what you would find in certain people's villas and things like that. But certainly the return of the amphora as a wine vessel is something that we have and will talk about again in the future. So that's how the Romans transported the vino is still in big, you know, ceramic vessels. And they would, because the bottles themselves, if they shipped things, they had to be packed in straw. It was not a regular thing, so it couldn't be done in a very practical manner. Bottles, obviously, much more useful for them for things like, makeups and perfumes and things like that. What actually happened that really started the bottle thing is in the 17th century, coal-burning furnaces were invented, and that allowed for a much hotter and more consistent temperature, which allowed thicker glass to be produced in a much more regular way. And so as soon as you get thicker glass, obviously you get much more durable bottles that are made out of it. And it was around this time as well that the use of cork started to become a viable closure method developed on the Iberian Peninsula. And as we'll talk about later, the Iberian Peninsula, so Spain and Portugal, specifically Portugal, especially, is the world's leading producer of cork. And we'll talk about cork trees and everything. But so that's where you get these things. And it was just a happy little coincidence that they came around about the same time. And that's when you started to see people using wine bottles as the preferred method of transportation. But of course, the next thing that had to happen was, you know, there were all sorts of sizes. There was no standardization. And so it took a long, long time for that to happen. And it wasn't until about 1730s, 1740s, that you started to see wine becoming aged. People realizing that wine turned out better, some wines, of course, when you left them alone for a long period of time. And so what people started to do is they wanted to know that they could set wine on their side, know exactly what they had bought in terms of volume. And so they started to make longer, flatter-sided bottles as opposed to the short, round ones that you still see in parts of like the Pfalz region of Germany. You can still see those kind of roundish bottles, but they don't store very well. So you started to see these much more standardized versions that were essentially like the bottles that you're going to see today. Especially actually the bottle we have, I'll try to describe it for those of you not watching on television. It's got kind of a broad, and you see this in like, you know, if any of you have had like Argentine wines, especially, you see this there, kind of broader shoulders, a little bit deeper shoulder that can catch sediment. And then long and lean, kind of like a Bordeaux bottle. It was not, by the way, until 1979, in the U.S. that the 750 milliliter, bottle was, standardized as our,
really,
as our, yeah, our, yeah, our volume de choix. It's a very strange thing. You can do math pretty easily around it. Very often it has to do with European measurements anyway. So I imagine we just kind of took their 25.4 ounce bottles that they were making and said, okay, that's that, and great, perfect. The wine we're drinking today, by the way, since you're all wondering, is the Pinot Grigio from one of my favorite producers, Redentore. It is absolutely beautiful.
Is it a fruit day?
I have actually not checked, but it's certainly... it's jumping out of there in a very nice way. It's very tangy and wonderful. It's actually tangier than I remember, but a lot of like peach. I'm getting tons of peach flavor on this. Redentore, it's if you go into the shop, it's this kind of quirky little stubby bottle with, sort of like this Venetian carnival crosshatch pattern on it. It's absolutely wonderful. I highly recommend it. I do know Carrie's reminding me I'm running out of time. So we are in March. It is... two weeks until our Chateau Moussard events, and we still have a couple tickets left for our March 20th History in a Bottle Evening with Chateau Moussard. Again, as a reminder, we're going to have Elizabeth George from Broadbent Selections. She is going to do a wonderful presentation on the history of this Lebanese estate, Chateau Musard, very, very historically important estate. We are going to taste through some of their wines, including a lot of their back vintages, which is the point of Musard, that it ages absolutely fantastically. And you'll get a chance to, you know, figure out why and how they stumbled upon this crazy little recipe, which centers around this French varietal Sasso, which is not a big deal in France, but in Lebanon, in Chateau Musard, it's the key. And then we're going to have a fantastic Lebanese food spread to have with that wine. Mediterranean Cuisine by TS will be providing that. There are $30 per ticket, tickets available. And as I said, there are still, some available. And I would encourage you to check that out, because cool things like that don't happen a lot in Bangor or anywhere else. So, dude, go. And if you are unable to go, or if, money is tight, I get it, please come to our free tasting. March 21st, Elizabeth will be there as well. We will be tasting wines of Chateau Musard as well, and having a great time. That is our free monthly tasting on the 21st from 5 to 7. So please come to both. Come to either, but don't miss it, because this is, believe me, I will extol the virtues of Bordeaux and Burgundy and the Napa Valley up and down, blah, 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 blah. This is a winery you don't think about. It's a place you don't think about. You should check it out. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Message in the bottle every Tuesday afternoon.